Just maybe to go back to Francis then, I think he offers a powerful context for looking at the challenge of mission to family. And I've tried to summarize it in that image up there of the cross with the field hospital at the center. What that image tries to convey is this, that like Francis is saying, there is a deep desire in people's hearts for a culture of love. There is an intuition in people's hearts, whether they're religious people or not, about their own dignity and their own vocation, destiny, to live lives of dignity for themselves and for their children. And Francis would say that that is spirit-led, that intuition. He would say that that's a powerful cultural force. And Tom English picked up that in the Irish society, talking about people's, that family is the most important thing, and love and belonging to love. But Francis would be saying, contradicting that desire in the culture is a system that promotes things above people. It's a mindset that dominates our economic system that powerfully shapes our world. Now, if I could tell just a quick story on that to kind of illustrate what I'm talking about. When Matthew was about 12, he came home from school. He was 13. He just started secondary school. He came home one day and he said to me, Dad, he says, I have a list of books. He says, grand. And he says, I have a list of PE gear. And he was looking at me and I says, fine, Matthew. He says, I have to get runners. And I knew there was something coming at this stage. I says, fine, Matthew, we'll get you the runners. He says, Nike runners. Right? Now, I didn't know what Nike runners were till I seen the price of them. And I says to Matthew, I says, we both said it to him, we says, we're not buying Nike runners. We'll get you a regular pair from Dunn Stores and you'll be fine. And he got upset. I says, what's wrong? And he says, if I go into school, he says, with a cheap pair of runners, I'm going to look stupid. That's what he said now. I'll never forget that, you know, and that's a long time ago. And I was hurt, and my wife was hurt, because there we were, trying to rear our young fella half normal, you know, that he'd have a decent sense of himself and of his worth. And here he was, already picking up and taking into his heart a message from the wider world that his worth depended on the label and his runners. And of course, the company producing those runners were delighted that here, putting the family under pressure to fork out big money. So that's the kind of thing Francis is getting at, and that part of what's driving the global economy is an extreme form of materialism that values things above people. And the thing about things is that they don't have an interiority. So if our measure of our worth is based on things, it marginalizes our interiority, it marginalizes our spirituality, it marginalizes our sense of the sacred, our sense of the divine, and it also marginalizes our sense of the sacredness of the other. And that's his critique. And he's saying that that works at a number of levels across the planet, and that the challenge to us as church is to be a field hospital precisely at the point of contradiction between the depth in people's hearts and the what he calls the golden calf, the return of the golden calf. And he looks in the joy of love at how that impacts on family. And in his three letters, he draws out that if our hearts are shaped by the experience of God's love, it will have one set of impacts. But if our hearts are shaped by the golden calf and the method of the mentality, the spirituality of the golden calf, it will have another set of impacts. And in Laudato Si, he's saying that our very planet is suffering now because of the depth and ferocity of the materialistic drive. And in the joy of the gospel, He's saying that whole societies are marginalized because of that. That there's, and he would have seen that at first hand from his time in South America. And but he's saying in The Joy of Love, the very same mindset can ravage families. And can damage our deep sense of who we are. But that's that the critique that he develops in The Joy of Love is part of a wider critique. Like, he sees all the things connected. And in terms of articulating, what's our response? What's our response to that reality, to that contradiction? And this comes across very strongly in The Joy of Love. He's saying, the good news is simply this, that we are loved by God. We are made in God's image to love and to be loved. And that bestows an extraordinary dignity on every man, woman, and child. And every man, woman, and child has an entitlement to a life that respects that dignity. And he would see family as crucial to that, but also a society that supports family as crucial to that. It makes an awful difference. And it's such an obvious thing, but for us people of faith, that maybe we take it for granted. Our belief that a God of love actually exists is an extraordinary thing to be bringing to the table. And sometimes Francis says, as church people, we plan as if God doesn't exist. But to really, and to recover our confidence in the extraordinariness of that insight, of that truth. We our religious experience at its depth, that's what it is. It is the intuition, the sense that God of love exists. And when we hear the good news from Jesus, we recognize in that good news our own experience of the God of love. But if we live in a culture that is highly materialistic, we lose confidence in that inner depth. So Francis is saying the golden calf denies God and wounds human dignity, and the challenge to heal the wounds. And that's what the Archbishop was saying. That's well enough, but we can hardly put out a local team, and there he has us aiming for Croke Park. And Francis also says, which is, I think it's a huge point for us, we are not mummies in a museum. And he's talking to us church people. He's saying, we're not here to preserve the way things always were. Whatever it takes to communicate the good news of the gospel to the people of today, to dig the deep well into the culture, to sink that well of faith into the culture, he says, let's do it. Let's do it. So that brings us on to and I'm nearly finished. The vision that he offers for family, for marriage, for love. And I suppose as a man married 35 years, I find that a very compelling image, a very compelling vision. No, he didn't draw it that way. I tried to, just for myself, just to see what's the essence of what he's saying. I just put that together. And that his starting point, the background, is God's love and God's compassion. Like, he's saying that the Christian vision for marriage and for family and for love can't be understood apart from the fact that God of love actually exists. And that God of love wants us to experience love, wants us to experience God, and that family is the place where that can most powerfully happen. So that's very powerful, that fundamental notion that our vision for family is rooted in our faith in the God of love. And separating those two things out, Francis says, our vision for marriage becomes like a burden, locking people into something that they can't get out of. And his second point, that we are fragile, that as human beings we feel drawn to love, drawn to be loved, but we make mistakes. We hurt the ones we love. that we find it hard to sustain our commitments. And it's very clear, Francis is very clear, God's compassion for our fragility, and that God never loses a desire to stay with us and does not dismiss us because of our fragility and because of our weakness and because of the mistakes we make. So a third element in Francis's vision is that community. We're not, that families are not isolated units, that we need to be inserted into supportive communities at society level, at local level, at extended family level, and strongly encourages that. And then in that context, marriage. And he doesn't hesitate to say that our vision for marriage is that it's permanent and it's exclusive. But the significance, the meaning of that makes complete sense in the context of a God of faith, that marriage is an act of faith in God, that committing, and that was certainly true in my own experience, that for me, our wedding day was a religious moment. It was a moment blessed by God. It was a moment when God was offering us the support to survive the marriage. And it was our act of faith. We were saying, yes, we will commit for life in the belief that God will support us, that God desires a love that lasts for us, and that if we trust in God, that we can have hope and confidence that our marriage will survive. And for that reason, that we commit, we close the door and we throw away the key. Now, in the sense, and Francis is clear that, and we would, like, I know my wife, I never doubted, but that she was going to stay with me. And that was great because, you know, we had our moments. But I know too that if I was abusive or in any way was going to harm her or harm our children, she would have been gone. You know, so it's not that, and Francis says that himself, it's not an absolute, but only a very last resort. But I certainly found it a powerful support, particularly in the early years. The early years were tougher than the later years. And there's a lovely song, you know, that one, life is an ocean and love is a boat, and in troubled waters it keeps us afloat. That powerful image of a marriage as a kind of, as a strong, safe boat on the waves of life. And within that, that love can grow. Like Francis is very powerful on that love grows in time, and that we don't start perfect, but that a stable marriage provides the time and the space for emotionally intelligent commitment to develop. And I've seen that over the years, that I know Breda has worked very hard at staying in communication with me and working through tensions and conflict and difficult moments and issues like our young fella in school and all of that. And she's very good at it. And I try to reciprocate as best I can. But I know she was very committed to developing an emotionally intelligent, mutually respectful way of living in the context of our commitment. And I suppose my experience of the 35 years is that the stability of our marriage has allowed that to grow. And that our love has matured, it has calmed, that image of the boat is very powerful to me for that reason, that we've come to that point. We didn't start off there. We wouldn't have been in our 20s sitting in a boat fishing. Do you know? But that beautiful, like Francis's reflection on growing in love, an emotionally intelligent commitment in that letter, that beautiful line from Paul, like love is patient, love is kind, and so on, is very powerful. And But what is the final element that resonates powerfully with me is that stable marriage in a faith context, in a supportive community context, where two people work together at building love, you know, conscious of their fragility, not overly demanding on each other, but that's a good space for kids to be brought into the world. And that's what he's saying. You know, he's not saying that every other space is a bad space, but he's saying that is a good space. And in fact, he's saying that is the best space. And, you know, and he's saying, why not communicate that vision as effectively as we can? You know, people are big enough and bold enough to make up their own minds after that. But that there is something deeply coherent, deeply relevant in our core vision, and that it corresponds to a deep desire in the human heart. People long for love that lasts. Children are devastated when their parents break up. Parents are devastated when the love dies. It's not easy on anybody. It's a deep wound. And Francis believes that our vision of love and marriage and family offers something very beautiful and very powerful to the people of today, not just to ourselves as church people, but to everybody.
So I just want to finish with this image, two images. You recognize the one on your left. That's the vision, you know, that the family. Do you recognize the one on the right? The woman at the well. So what strikes me very powerfully in the document that Francis is trying to be both visionary in the sense of being uncompromising and saying, look, we have a particular vision that, and he believes it's deeply relevant to the people of our time, and offering that vision, and at the same time saying to us, at the very same time, and in a way that's not contradictory, that our vision, yes, but also a practice of inclusion. Should we deal with the woman in the well? Was Jesus right or wrong in engaging with the woman in the well? Is the image of the woman in the well in Catholic literature, is that okay, or should it be excluded? You know, and of course it's okay, isn't it? Of course it's okay. I know myself, if my marriage did fail, and if we became separated, that I would still want that vision of marriage for my kids. I'd want it for my loved ones. I'd want them at least to be aware of it, to have the option of considering it. You know, and I wouldn't feel that because my marriage didn't work out, that I was being diminished or demeaned by the vision being offered. Does that make sense? I think it's both, and it presents a big challenge to us, because I don't think we've been good at inclusion. You know, we've been strong traditionally in terms of putting out there the vision for Christian marriage. And I think Francis is saying yes, yes, yes to that, but also yes, yes, yes to inclusion and to the challenge of working out how we hold both together. And it's not easy. Like, there's bishops all over the world fighting over it. So, you know, it's no harm if we have a bit of a row over it as well. But anyway, that's the final image. Okay. Now, what I'm going to invite you to do, we just have a bit of chaos, if you don't mind, for a few minutes. I'd love just to give you a chance to chat to each other. So I'm going to ask you, and then I'll just offer you a short reflection, but the first thing I'd like you to do is to make full use of the space and to pull around as best you can into threes or fours or fives, but not bigger than that, because you won't be able to hear each other, you won't be able to talk to each other. So do you mind having a go at that, just getting out of your straight rows and pulling around into little circles? So we're going to take about 20 minutes, and then we'll have an open forum for a few minutes. But I'd invite you again to be quiet just for a minute, And then I'd invite you to share from that. So I'm asking you to take time now to hear where we really are within ourselves with what we have heard. Did I hear anything that surprised me? Did anything make me uneasy? What have I heard that makes me hopeful or joyful or glad? What images or phrases stand out for me? So just be quiet with that, those questions, just for a minute now. Okay, folks, if I can call you to attention, we might finish the conversation in the big group. One of the challenges, I suppose, about about family and family life, and that is how there can be a kind conversation between people who don't agree. You know, and I think there's need for a kind conversation between church and wider society, but also internally in the church, we're going to need to learn to talk kindly to one another. You know, and already there are, you know, rows and disagreements building up across the church on Pope Francis's The Joy of Love, and that's fine. But if we can have a kind conversation, you know, that tries to foster mutual understanding at least. So we might practice that here. Like, say what you want to say, say what's on your mind, but see if we can talk to each other kindly. Anybody love to start? Is there anything you want to? We'll try and hear a few voices. And if you keep it short, it'll allow a number of people to speak.
Hit the microphone. We had an interesting discussion here just about, I suppose, nuances of opinion around the faith formation in schools and how valuable that is. But I suppose some of us were wondering, would it be good to bring some of that more into church life? And then other thoughts were maybe some of the children then whose parents don't go to Mass might miss out. And if there was any chance of bringing people back through the faith formation, sacramental formation in schools, would that be useful? So there was just interesting differences of opinion there.
Just put up your hand if there's any comment you want to offer on. It'd be lovely to hear some of, because there's lovely conversation going on in the small groups. It'd be lovely to get a flavour.
I think the most important thing you said today, well, the thing I'm going to bring back with me anyway, is you were talking about the big stack of biscuit tins, USA and all the rest of it, you know? And your father said nothing. He just took one and he went down the road. Now, in my opinion, now this is only my opinion, I think familial love is a sort of a superficial love, because it's natural. It comes from nature. You love your children. Why wouldn't you love your children? People who have no faith love their children. I think it has only value if it nurtures something within the home that goes out from the home. A deeper, a more profound love. Now, the rich man, he loved his family. He probably, he was quite happy to spend eternity in hell if he could only save his brothers. There was a dirty, smelly man at his gate, and he never thought to bring the few scraps off his table and send his servant down and feed him. I think familial love is grand. We all love our children. Everyone does. But I think something has to be born in the family that can go outside the door, go down the road, and show the world what Christians are. That's my idea anyway.
Thank you very much. Good, good. Your hand up.
I think we might all go back and examine the Nike philosophy a bit deeper, because it permeates the whole of society, and I think is something which lubricates the whole machinery of the world today. In other words, I will only do what the person next door is doing, be me a teenager or an octogenarian. We have only to look today at the fashions and the mores of the younger generation. both in style and in habit, to realize that they are prisoners of the society in which they live. In other words, they will only do, they will only wear, they will only say what is the done thing today, irrespective of truth. Watch the mores of today, watch the styles of today, the haircuts and the drainpipes. I'll guarantee you that within a year the bell bottoms will be back and nobody, young fellow, will be seen dead in a pair of drainpipes. So much of what beggars religion today is what this hardcore that you spoke about that we have to bore down through. But that we don't realise the influence of sociology and social mores on the religion itself. I honestly believe that most of the time we are preaching to the converted. The only thing is, how do we get them to gush forth as an oil well might by boring down into their mentality and giving them enough courage to rise above the Joneses and everybody else around so that, you know, they are there. Believe you me, they are there. And you don't have to bore very deep at times to find that. Give them some crisis in their lives, both either in a family or in a community. And God is very near.
Thanks. Okay. Lovely to hear a few more voices now. Just put up your hand if there's something you'd like to share.
Thanks, Martin. First of all, Martin, congratulations on that wonderful presentation. I think you hit the nail on the head all the time, and well done. The thought that struck me, sorry, I beg your pardon, how do we get all our politicians and the Irish nation excited and looking forward to this year of the family next August? And I think maybe that one of the aspects of Tom Inglis's research might be a clue to that. The last point in the research that you listed was we don't speak about family in faith terms. And I think that is important. Because if you start preaching the faith, the politicians won't be interested and a lot of the population won't be interested. But as Pope Francis said, family is so... I mean, it's the key, it's the key to all society. And you did talk about... The time you organised an invitation to a faith event, and only 8 came. But then you invited them to come to a celebration, and 800 came. So perhaps there's a clue in that. But going back, again, Pope Francis talked about, one of the things he talked about was growing in love, and the family growing in love, but I presume primarily the husband and wife growing in love. And in the early stages, it's not all necessarily a bed of roses. We all know that. But and what struck me about that, because I did do a bit of writing one time, a few times, and I was talking about the meaning of life, and I quoted Father Ron Rahlheiser. You probably have read him, and he appears around the world in various publications, including the Irish Catholic here. And some 4 or 5 years ago, maybe more, he wrote about the meaning of life and talking about what was important. It's not, if you like, the passing pleasures and so forth, or maybe the sensual pleasures that newly married people expect, and it's going to be all great and all that. But these are things you forget about very quickly, and in later life, they mean nothing. What's important is what was meaningful in life. What did you do in life that was meaningful? And again, that's not got to do with faith or religion. So again, if in trying to sell the year of the family, maybe if we think about promoting that this year of the family is about promoting, if you like, stable society, what's meaningful in life, what will make people happy in the long run. So that rather than pushing too much faith about it, I think Pope Francis has a lovely balance there. So I think I've more than said enough.
Thank you very much indeed. Great, great. Anybody with a hand over there, so we might just pass the microphone back down there.
I have a flood of thoughts here now, but I hope I can be as eloquent as some of the people who have spoken. But I can say I agree with everything that was said, because as a mother and as a past teacher, I can honestly say I think the young generation are absolutely wonderful. And we, in my generation, grew up accepting what we were told and not questioning and maybe not searching and not looking for the answers and not finding. And I think the new generation, the wonderful young generation, can think for themselves. They can question. Okay, they're living in a scientific world and they're met with evolution and the planets and all the wonderful documentaries. And I think in their search, they have to find out for themselves that their inner selves can connect with God and it's not the institution. And I do feel sad that I think, you know, that they have been lost. Okay, young people love to party. You said you mentioned all the, and I was going to mention that about you questioned why only eight came. You know, I mean, I think the Catholic Church, including Pope Francis, has to question why, how are the young people not connected? And I think that's the core of what we have to deal with here today, you know.
Just one more comment, if there's anybody else has a bit to say, that don't be shy. Somebody was asking me when I get the mic over, did I get the Nike runners? So we didn't.
Just as a mother of three children and having the Nike runners experience myself, as I'm sure all of us have, who have children, the thing that I'm so enlightened by is Pope Francis and his inclusion. I think that's the key word. And also, I do believe we can drop the word religion and replace it with God's love, God's unconditional love. And I think that's the message we have to get out. We all love our children, but we may not love what they do. We love our children as God loves us. Despite what we do, he forgives us. And I think that's the message we have to get out. And I think to bring families together in the knowledge of unconditional love and including everybody, whether they're divorced or separated or whatever, we have to find a place for them in our hearts, in our community and in our churches and bring out the message of God's love to everybody.
Okay, we'll stop there. We're just at 12 now. So I'll just maybe finish just with a story again from my own experience. When I mentioned when I was a young fella, we lived in it was a big family living in a small house. Now I didn't know it was a small house because all the houses were the same size. And it was only when I was in my 20s and doing some work on decorating and with a builder that I discovered big houses. And I was going into big, fancy houses. And I decided in my 20s it would be great to own a big house. I would love to own a big house. But I went working in youth ministry, so by the time we got married, we were on €40 a week. And somebody said to me, she said, well, she didn't marry you for your money anyway. But we hadn't much chance of getting the big house. So we got a small house. And over the years, we developed it. And as we could afford it. And we sold it just before the crash. So what we paid $20,000 for, we got back nearly $300,000 for. So we lobbed the $300,000 in the bank anyway. And we were waiting to get a new, to buy a house. I got a call from the bank manager. And he says to me, he says, that's a fine pile of money, he says. He says, 'tis. He says, what are you doing with it, he says. I says, well, we're going to buy a house. He says, I could give you a loan, he says, on the strength of it, he says, and you could have a fabulous house. And that was the way the conversation was going, yeah. That was the way, so my wife was there with me, and there was me chance of getting me big house. And... I just shook my head at her, and she shook her head at me. There was no way. Like, our plan was actually to trade down, to clear the mortgage on the old, to get a smaller house, a cheaper house, and to invest in a bigger garden, because gardening is what we love doing. So that's what we did anyway. We told them thanks, but no thanks. And then a year later, I'd mentioned earlier, I'd gotten cancer. So and the cancer wasn't too bad. It was the chemo afterwards that nearly killed me. So, but I was about 2 years where I could do very little, and because I was self-employed, I wasn't working. And I was sitting at home, and Brida was mad at me because she had told me years ago, go and get checked in case you get cancer. And I said, there's no fear of me getting cancer. So she was mad at me anyway. But one pressure we didn't have when I was lying in the bed, and I was very glad of it, was financial pressure. Like, I didn't have a mortgage to pay, I didn't have a big house to heat, you know, and we survived very comfortably, and the fact that I was not earning any money for a few years. And I can tell you, when I was in the bed sick, you know, and we were worried. I mean, we planned about what would we do if I died, you know, like how she would marry. But the one thing we didn't have to worry about was money, because, and, you know, we had structured our lives in a way that said, okay, you don't need that much, and you can manage fine on, you know, on enough. And I was very glad at that time that I belonged to a faith tradition that convinced me that there's more to life than material things, you know. And for me, that was where the rubber hit the road, that it makes a huge practical difference, that faith perspective. So I leave you with that story, and thanks a million, folk, for your... Sorry, there's... Okay, and Bishop Dorn is going to address us now, and we can pick up on that. That's great, yeah.
Just on the last speaker, I thought the word inclusion is so, so important to us as a faith community. Inclusion. And you mentioned it a lot there. But I do believe in you telling the story of your son, and in a sense taking a very brave decision, both of you, and allowing him and worrying about him and all of that, it is something that is probably a good image for what we, as in a sense, church should be, because we have a lot of baggage at the moment, and a lot of stuff has happened to the church in terms of the sexual abuse and all of that baggage. Now, our leadership may not have had the best way of dealing with that, and still, in a sense, has to be dealt with. But I think the church has to be brave in taking risks and, in a sense, like yourself, not knowing where it's going to go, etc. The same risk where we are, in a sense, struggling with what we want to do with our youth initiatives within the Diocese of Ireland, etc. But all I'm saying is that we need to be brave and we need to be inclusive. But also, very recently we had a Sunday to Choose Life, promoting life, especially those who have no voice recently. Now, at the moment you have an awful lot of politicians who are on board on that and want to change the constitution, etc. These are the same guys who will want to support the family. And if the Pope comes and the event, they want to be seen in photographs and the rest of it. And yet, our challenge is to include even the politicians in that process of compassion, with inclusion, all of that. Now, that's a very interesting stew. And I'm not sure how it will taste, but yet that's the challenge. But it also is a risk in many ways, but it's a risk we have to take. And to go forward, because predictability sometimes is not a good thing.